Chapter 2, Module 2, Electrochemical Gradients, Synaptic Computation and Receptor Adaptation, Equilibrium Potentials and Membrane Conductance. Membrane voltage emerges from both ion gradients and selective conductance. An ion's equilibrium potential is the voltage at which its electrical and concentration forces balance. If a membrane were permeable only to potassium, its voltage would approach the potassium equilibrium potential. A resting neuron is mostly, but not exclusively, permeable to potassium, so its resting potential lies nearer the potassium equilibrium potential than the sodium equilibrium potential. Chloride permeability and electrogenic transport also contribute. Changing extracellular potassium has a particularly strong effect because it alters the gradient for potassium leaving the cell. Hyperkalemia makes the resting potential less negative. Mild depolarization may initially increase excitability, but sustained depolarization inactivates voltage-gated sodium channels and can ultimately impair conduction. Hypokalemia generally makes excitation more difficult and also alters cardiac repolarization. The clinical effect depends on speed, magnitude, acid-base state, medicines, and the condition of excitable tissues. The sodium-potassium pump maintains gradients rather than directly generating each action potential. During brief activity, existing gradients supply the ion movement. Over longer periods, pump activity restores what repeated signaling dissipates. Pump failure during energy deprivation therefore has a delayed but catastrophic effect. Gradients decay, cells swell, calcium regulation fails, and electrical signaling becomes unreliable. Current depends on conductance and driving force. Opening a channel does not guarantee that its ion will move in one fixed direction. Movement depends on membrane voltage relative to that ion's equilibrium potential. This is why opening chloride channels can inhibit a mature neuron by holding voltage near the chloride equilibrium potential, while altered chloride gradients in developing or diseased cells can change the effect. Action potential diversity and conduction failure. Action potentials vary among tissues because channel types, timing, and expression differ. A peripheral axon uses a rapid sodium-dependent spike for communication. Ventricular muscle has a prolonged plateau created partly by calcium entry, supporting contraction and a long refractory period that prevents tetanic activation. Pacemaker cells depolarize spontaneously because several inward and outward currents change during diastole. The shared principle is regenerative channel opening, but the waveform is adapted to tissue function. Refractoriness has two components. During the absolute refractory period, many sodium channels are inactivated, and another propagated spike cannot begin. During the relative refractory period, some channels have recovered, but persistent potassium conductance or incomplete recovery means a stronger stimulus is required. Refractory behavior limits firing frequency, separates impulses, and shapes re-entry in cardiac tissue. Conduction can fail through several mechanisms. Demyelination increases current leak and may prevent the next node from reaching threshold. Compression impairs membrane function and local blood flow. Ischemia reduces energy supply. Local anesthetics bind voltage-gated sodium channels and preferentially affect channels that open repeatedly, producing use-dependent block. Axons with small diameter and high firing activity are often affected before larger motor fibers, although exact clinical patterns depend on the drug, concentration, and anatomy. Temperature also changes channel kinetics and conduction. Cooling slows nerve activity and can prolong cardiac electrical intervals. Fever may expose channel disorders or increase seizure susceptibility in predisposed patients. These effects illustrate that excitability is a property of proteins operating in a chemical environment, not an abstract electrical circuit isolated from metabolism. Synapses as computations. Synaptic strength is controlled before and after transmitter release. Presynaptic calcium entry, vesicle availability, autoreceptors, and inhibitory axoaxonic input determine how much transmitter reaches the cleft. Postsynaptic receptor number, receptor type, membrane location, and intracellular signaling determine the response. Uptake transporters and degrading enzymes control duration. A medicine can therefore alter signaling without directly mimicking the natural transmitter. Spatial summation combines inputs arriving at different locations. Temporal summation combines inputs arriving close together in time. Their effect depends on dendritic cable properties and distance from the trigger zone. An excitatory input on a distal dendrite may weaken as it spreads, while inhibition placed near the cell body can strongly control whether integrated current reaches the axon initial segment. Inhibition is not merely the opposite of excitation. Hyperpolarizing inhibition moves voltage away from threshold. Shunting inhibition increases membrane conductance and dissipates nearby excitatory current even if voltage changes little. Disinhibition removes an inhibitory influence and can activate a pathway without adding direct excitation. These arrangements allow neural networks to select signals, sharpen contrast, coordinate timing, and prevent runaway activity. Short-term synaptic plasticity reflects recent activity. Repeated impulses may temporarily facilitate release because calcium remains in the terminal, or depress transmission because releasable vesicles are depleted. Long-term strengthening and weakening involve receptor trafficking, kinase activity, gene expression, and structural change. Learning uses these mechanisms, but similar plasticity can amplify nociceptive pathways or reinforce compulsive behavior, receptor families, and biased responses. Ligand-gated ion channels translate binding directly into rapid current. G-protein-coupled receptors activate intracellular effectors that can amplify signals, regulate channels, alter enzymes, and change transcription. Enzyme-linked receptors, including many receptor tyrosine kinases, organize phosphorylation networks important in growth and metabolism. Intracellular receptors bind lipid-soluble signals and regulate gene expression, but some also produce faster non-genomic effects. One receptor can produce different effects in different cells because downstream machinery differs. Activation of a beta-adrenergic receptor in cardiac tissue increases rate and force, while related signaling in some smooth muscle promotes relaxation. The ligand does not contain a complete instruction. The cell interprets it through receptor subtype, coupling proteins, enzymes, channels, and gene expression. Agonism and antagonism are also more nuanced than simple on and off. A partial agonist activates a receptor, but produces a lower maximal response than a full agonist in the same system. In the presence of a full agonist, it may reduce overall activation by occupying receptors. An inverse agonist reduces constitutive receptor activity. Allosteric modulators bind away from the main ligand site and change receptor responsiveness. Receptors can favor different downstream pathways depending on the ligand and cellular context, a phenomenon often called biased signaling. This helps explain why two drugs acting at the same named receptor may differ in therapeutic and adverse effects. Clinical response also depends on receptor reserve. Tissues with spare receptors may preserve a maximal response despite partial receptor blockade. Desensitization, withdrawal, and diagnostic interpretation. Persistent stimulation commonly triggers phosphorylation, uncoupling, internalization, or reduced receptor synthesis. The same dose then produces less effect. Downstream adaptation may occur even when receptor number is unchanged. Tolerance can therefore be pharmacokinetic, receptor level, cellular, behavioral, or a mixture. Escalating dose without identifying the mechanism can increase toxicity while producing diminishing benefit. Chronic blockade can produce receptor upregulation or increased pathway sensitivity. Abrupt withdrawal then exposes the adapted system to endogenous transmitter and may cause rebound activity. This principle contributes to rebound tachycardia after sudden withdrawal of some sympathetic antagonists and to other withdrawal syndromes. Medicines that alter neural or endocrine signaling often require planned tapering according to current guidance. Endocrine tests are snapshots of dynamic axes. A result should be interpreted with time of day, pulsatility, binding proteins, acute illness, medicines, pregnancy, renal or hepatic clearance, and the expected feedback relationship. A hormone within the population reference interval may still be inappropriate for the paired controlling hormone. Dynamic stimulation or suppression tests ask whether an axis can respond, but they also depend on a valid protocol and suitable clinical context. The unifying method is to move from gradient to channel, channel to cell, cell to network, and network to whole body feedback. At each level, ask what drives the signal, what terminates it, how repeated exposure changes responsiveness, and what reserve remains. This prevents a receptor name or laboratory value from being mistaken for a complete physiological explanation.